Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. It is a sunny Tuesday afternoon for me. I hope you guys are having an absolutely fantastic day. Today we have Charles Carrillo with us from Harborside Partners and Global Investors Podcast. This is another multifamily syndicator. We love multifamily guys, so I am super excited to have him here. Charles, thanks for hopping on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Gabe.
Absolutely. I told you before we got on here, we like starting with stories. We like to hear how people got into real estate. So why don't you take us to the beginning? How'd you get started in real estate?
All right. A very quick story. So my dad's been investing in multifamily since the 80s, I think 1984. So when I grew up into real estate, my dad had a bunch of different properties, mainly like 6 units and 12 units and some threes with a partner. He self-managed them. He had a small little management team that he worked with. And they weren't that great of properties. They were D, C minus properties, like a lot of investors get started in. And when I graduated college, I started with a house hack of what we call now. Back then, it was just trying to rent out 2 floors and live on one for kind of nothing. But it was, he made sure that I bought in a better area. And that's kind of
he learned his lessons. He's like, son, don't do what I did.
He wouldn't even look at properties that weren't in good areas. And that's something I tell investors and people just kind of like brush that off. But I'm like, you've never owned property and see my, it's like so simple, but it's people don't listen because they're like, oh, wow, look at all these high cash on cash over here. I'm like, you don't want to go over there.
I don't want to jump into your story too much, but I'm actually going through my first experience. I usually, you know, I underwrite, I try to get good areas, but there was this one self-storage deal and it was in a bad area. And I was like, oh, it's such a good deal. I want to buy it. Ended up buying it. It's been broken into so many times. So lesson learned. Your dad learned it first. I'm sure you learned it next. I've learned it now. Don't buy in bad areas, no matter what the cash on cash should be. So, all right, keep going down your story.
So a couple of years later, that was 06, 08, I bought another property, 09, bought my first commercial property, and then kind of growing from there. And I self-managed those properties for 6 years. In 2012, I moved down to Florida. And after a couple of years down in Florida, I've been focusing mainly on syndication properties. So we've been involved with syndications for, I guess, 5+ years, so several years here. And it's really what our focus is different markets in the Southeast. And mainly right now, we started with some smaller syndications, but right now our real focus is 100+ units. And we're really buying B minus and above areas. And we're buying stuff built in the 80s, 90s, and newer. So,
all right. I love it. So you got started right after the big crash, or actually right during, essentially.
Yeah. So at the end of 06, it was a terrible time to start. But, you know, 08, it was like 2 months after Lehman and like 2 months before Bernie Madoff. And I wasn't not being savvy enough was probably the best thing I ever knew, because I would have done it if I thought anything, because I look back on it now, I'm like, crazy. But bought at the end of 09. So it all equals out. You know what I mean? That's why I think if you're being a buyer in any market, obviously it might be some time till we have like an 08 type situation again. But if you're a buyer in every market, I mean, it's just how it's going to be. And you're going to have some doubles. You're going to have some home runs. You're going to have some singles. And it's really just trying to minimize your downside on the deals. And as Warren Buffett says, don't lose money, right?
Yep, absolutely. And that all starts with underwriting. So you guys do not fudge on your underwriting. Just that's a big lesson so far. Right on. So so you bought it your first in 2008, 2009. Do you still have those in your portfolio, or have you sold those off?
I sold them all. They were all in Central Connecticut, and I sold them as a portfolio in the first half of 2022.
Okay, great. So you got great returns on those ones. That was almost a decade of holding those. Well, not quite a decade, but still a very long time for holding those ones.
Yeah. And it was kind of like a blessing. It was, I probably would have held them longer, but I had a manager that was retiring and getting rid of certain accounts before he sold. And he was getting rid of anything under like 100 units he was managing. So that was us. And it worked out best because we got it listed and we got sold before the unknowns of the end of 2022 came around and people were a little bit more skittish on buying properties for, you know, what the price was at that time. They're looking for a discount. So,
yep. Yep, makes sense. Are you guys still self-managing? You started out self-managing. Are you still doing that, or are you you guys are using third-party property managers now?
Yeah, for the last 10 plus years, I've been using third-party property managers. It just allows you to scale. And if we were in one area that had, I would say, it'd have to be like 1,000 plus units, maybe 500 plus units, something like this, of like the size of properties we buy, then self-managing would make sense. But we've been very lucky to find good managers where we are. And we've only had to change one or two, which is a huge hassle. So try to avoid doing that. The bigger the property, the more intense it is and time consuming that takes to really do the switch over. But that's really, I think if you get to that point where you can go vertical, that's fantastic. We haven't got to that in different markets. We work with three different partners in a couple different markets or a few different markets throughout the Southeast. And we really ride off of kind of the system that they have in place since they're mainly boots on the ground. And we're working with mainly doing some due diligence, working with investors, and really doing part of the asset management with the property management company.
Nice, nice. Yeah, once you find those good managers, you really got to hold on to them because it is it's hard. And especially like if you find a manager, it's bad. Find another one, the next one's bad. Having to go through so many managers, it can definitely bring you down. Definitely lose your motivation to stick that property out. But once you find the good one and they're actually doing what you know you hoped they would do, that is, it's like gold. You got to keep those guys around.
Exactly.
So take me through your first syndication. You started off 0809. You were doing self-managing. You got on third-party property managers later on. When did you guys actually switch to the syndication model, and how did that transition kind of look for you?
So a few years back, I did some LP investing several years back into syndications to see how everything worked and see if it was kind of like what we were interested in doing. And it was really the way of moving our portfolio and business along. And what we did was we were able to now, reach out to a lot of people, because when you're investing in real estate, there's always people that are interested. I mean, you're never going to go to like any kind of party and tell people I invest in real estate and it ends there. You know what I mean? It's not like, you have some boring, everybody wants to know about it. Everybody knows someone that's made money in real estate. Everybody like knows someone that's lost money or like had the headache of being a landlord. So It's a very interesting business, no matter how you're involved in real estate investing. And so with that being said, I had people that were interested in investing, and I was living with my now wife in St. Petersburg. We had a deal that we were doing with a partner in Tampa, and it was 59 units. We ended up selling this about a year plus ago. And 59 units. It was a 32 unit with an office, and then there was threes and four units that we bought actually around it. So it was actually buying a one, that 132, and then the other properties around it, and made it into kind of like a portfolio. And then we sold it off as two, actually. We were going to sell as one, and we sold it off as two. We sold off the 32, and then we sold off the other ones to another investor. But it, worked out well. Portfolios are definitely harder to work with. They're harder to finance. Even though you could walk to the different properties, they're a little bit more attentive with your property manager as well. You know what I mean? So it's just something that you're going to get a discount, or you should be getting a discount, but you also have to know that that discount's probably going to continue. If you're selling them as a portfolio at the end, it's going to continue through you. You know what I mean? And that's one of the downsides of it. It's like buying in a D-class area. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, you had a great deal. Right. But the other person coming in, there's no really upside to this other than another person just looking for headaches and cash flow. So the thing though is that you have to find another one of those person, and you're not getting like, there's not going to be some huge value add between that. You know what I mean? But we did really well because Tampa was growing and these properties had been built in the 70s, 80s, and all concrete block. And we did a lot of work with them, and we got them repositioned, and we got them sold at just over a year ago.
Nice. Well, congratulations on that.
This was your
first syndication that you did. Like, you guys did the syndication model. You raised capital from outside investors, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we raised one. It was the property was properties were 3. I want to say like 6 million, something like this, and we raised like 1.8. Okay. So we raised quite a bit. It was our first time, so we raised quite a reserve on it, which you don't really see from most indicators. But everybody that was involved in the deal had their own multifamily properties. So everyone was experienced that was involved in the GP, and we came through. And there was some, there's always issues. We were trying to buy another 22 unit around the backside of it at the time. And that buyer like fell out, and it was quite the process, but we were able to complete it. We got good returns out to our investors. We went through COVID with it, and so it's, you know, there's a lot of hurdles, but that's kind of how it works in real estate. I mean, you're getting that better return usually because you're willing to accept the bumpy return and not just a smooth return.
Yep. And you mentioned you had an outsized or oversized reserve, a capital reserves. Would you do it the same? Because I have been leaning more towards increasing the reserves on my own properties, just because things can and always do go wrong. And it's just nice to have that. You know, you can always give it back to the investors, but it's nice to have it when you close to make sure that you can get everything done that you had hoped to get done. Would you go the same route and, you know, raise a little bit more money than you think you need just in case something goes wrong? Or are you pulling back on those reserves going forward?
I think we're padding our reserves even more going into the year we're in right now. And I think I have a lot of limited partner investments, and most of the operators that we're working with that I'm invested passively with are doing the same. And, you know, so they might be, you know, having your distributions or giving you, you know, a third off of it or whatever it is, you know what I mean, to pad out more of the reserve going into who knows what 2023, the end of it, you know what I mean, is going to have and what's 2024 going to hold. So it's just, I think that's safe. And when you're going to times like this, but you should always have the reserve, and the reserve will be, that's one good thing about having the financing and getting a lender to do it, is because they're going to look at that and they're going to tell you, you have to have this much in reserves. And then you also want to have, you know, reserves depending on exactly what kind of work you're doing to the project or what it needs. And so, you know, it could be starting off with simple 6 months of your operating reserves, right, into a bank account. And then it's like, okay, well, we want to put, you know, these units, this CapEx that's happening right away, we're doing, you know, this is happening, because you're never going to cash flow any of your CapEx. And that's a huge mistake from beginners as well. So any work you're doing in the property, make sure it's put in reserves. If you're getting money from financing, like if you're getting a, you know, agency loan and you're getting some money for doing repairs from that loan, then what happens is just make sure you have the majority of that in reserves as well. Because you want to go in right away as you start repositioning the property, and you're going to start wanting to get people closer to market rents while keeping them in the units, the good tenants. You know, you want to be going in there and, you know, roofs on these buildings are bad. They got to be done right away. This has to be done. You're going to be taking care of a lot of work. There's going to be a lot of check writing in the first 90 days on that property. And you're going to be writing double checks because you're like getting rid of this vendor, but this vendor's contract doesn't end. And it's, you know, I call it the initial stabilization period. It's like that first 6 months of owning a large property where you're really figuring out what's going on to the details, right? You have an idea when you bought it, but you might not know. You might say, well, I was told 88 people are paying rent on time, and it's really 84. Not the end of the world. It's just something that you have to know so that, listen, we're going to give this person to, like, you know, it's just a little different of how you're going to manage the property or what you're going to do, and figuring out who's in it, get updated contact information. And the lower class, let's just say, down the spectrum, the property is, the more that can change. You'll find people that aren't even there anymore. It was like someone's brother-in-law, you know what I mean, that right. Moved out like 2 years ago. And they're not even on the lease. They're just staying in that apartment paying rent. So it's just, you know, you get less of that when you're getting into B's, and definitely less when you're getting the A's, because you have people that are like, oh, you know, working for jobs for 5, 10 plus years. You know what I mean? So just one thing to know going into that.
Yep. And when you get lending on your syndications, do you generally find that the lenders are okay with rolling the capital improvements into that loan, or do you have to raise that outside of the loan itself?
It depends on the lender. You'll get a lot of that. They used to be with like bridge loans, and you'll get some of it with some of the agency lenders that will do that. And it's fine up to a level, but at some point before you're getting that draw, work has to be done. So you need to have that money in reserves to do it. But there's some things initially when you're going into it, and it's, you know, roofs are the big thing. I live in Florida now. So it's like roofs is a huge thing for us. You know what I mean? And it's something that it has to be done right away. You can't screw around with water and stuff in your property. So if it comes in, like, that's happening right away. The money's going to be raised for it. And that's like the day we close, they're coming in and they're doing that, you know, or they're starting the process on that. And then you're kind of working from there. You know, you're kind of working down from the top down on different projects. And you're kind of, when units are turning, then you're kind of figuring out when, you know, how leases are coming due. And then you're figuring out on how you're doing the upgrade updating. And now it's going to be a little different because, you know, we bought 157 unit property beginning of last year in outside of Atlanta. And we were doing initially like 5 to 7 units. And toward the end of 2022, we've changed that now to doing renovating like 2 to 3 units per month. And the only reason is just because of where we're going with the economy, and we're still keeping the business plan going, and we're still doing it as turns come in. You know, if 4 units come up next month, we'll probably renovate all 4 of them. Or what we might do is we might sign 2 of them and we might renovate 2 of them, depending on how heavy lift they are. If they're like clean units, we might rent both of them out how they are. If they're like really damaged, we probably will go in and do the work, you know what I mean, and bring it up to that point. But you really have to test the appetite of your of the market as you're going through, because it's going to be something we're going to renovate now, or we're going to renovate maybe 2024, you know what I mean? So it's just really, you won't, the main goal here is when you're going to the unknown of kind of, I feel like where we are now, of everybody says we're going to recession and we might be in recession already, depending on who you're talking to. I think at that point, it's really keeping occupancy high and keeping collections high. And then kind of going from there with as you're continuing out the business plan. But all your major stuff that has to be done, even if people, you know, even if you have tenants that are still paying regular, the classic rental rates, you know what I mean? So you have to have all that money for all those major CapEx items already put away, no matter what's happening with the lender.
Yep. And so when you guys buy properties that are generally, you know, they have a high vacancy, do you in or lower rents in order to fill the vacancy, or do you just try to get market rates at the very beginning? You know, even if it means that you're not going to be filling the property as fast.
That's a great question, Gabe. I would say that, first of all, we at this part of the market, I mean, we're not going to be buying properties. I'm not buying any properties that are probably under 90% occupied. It's just, okay. It's a little too risky. Yeah. Maybe if we would go down to 85 or something, if we were, you know, if we kind of had more of an idea of where the market was going. But we're buying stuff right now, 90%. If there's units that are in there at market rates, or we have vacancies, it depends on what we're doing with that unit. You know, I'm a believer that the first thing is you're coming in there and you're figuring out what are good tenants and what aren't. So who's paying on time? Where am I, you know, where are they? You know, they're not calling the office every day for something small or for an issue. They're not, you know, they're good tenants. You know what I mean? They're respecting the property and respecting everybody around it, paying the rent on time. And if they do that, you might give them a rent increase of, you know, just a few percent, you know what I mean? Just to keep them in the unit and do it. Because what we want to do is we really want to stagger those leases now, because I don't want to have... It's a weird thing with multifamily is between like Thanksgiving and like February 1st, March 1st, it's not, no matter where you are in the country, mainly up north as well, but it's not a hot time to rent apartments. So it's during this time, you're trying to keep people in there and keeping paying, and then you want to stagger it. So if you have 100 units, you try to want to get it as perfect as possible to 8, you know, leases going a month, which won't really happen. But that means that in the beginning, you might not be renewing any leases. I might be keeping everybody on month to month and just seeing what happens. And then as we're going to have some vacant units, those are going to be ones we renovate first. So if you have 5 vacant units, we're going to renovate those, try to rent them with exactly what we did with the business plan, and then see how that goes. If they rent fast, or if we talk to other people in the property and say, hey, we have these that are ready. Do you want to move over to here for this rent? You'll find some that do that. You'll find some that don't want to rent. You'll find some that will take your rent increase and say, fine, because we haven't had a rent increase in 4 years here. So it really just depends on the submarket you're working in, because I've seen them different, you know, different in different areas.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny that you say, February to March is the slow time in multifamily, and that corresponds exactly with the slow time in self-storage. In fact, last month it was the slowest month ever for our leasing up our properties. Obviously, there's a lot more turnover in self-storage, but I bet there's a correlation because people aren't moving, so they don't need storage. Yeah. So makes sense. Yeah. We're running down the clock. I do want to ask one more question before we move over to the quick question round. You mentioned that you invested as a limited partner before you opened your first syndication. Would you do it the same again? And what did you kind of learn investing as an LP before becoming the GP on a project?
Yeah, well, number one, I would make sure that you own multifamily first. You like yourself before taking any money from anyone. The LP is a great step in the next direction of seeing how it works, because now you have not just this property with tenants, now you have property, tenants, and investors. It's a whole nother plate that has to keep spinning. So yes, it's very important to see how that's managed. Then also, I invest a lot with limited partners, right? And in all different types of deals and all different types of commercial asset classes. And I'd like to see exactly how their communication is. And that fine tunes it for me, because communication is something, and I always try to go overboard with communication in the sense, if I see someone that doesn't seem that they have their answers, like one of our LPs answered their questions. So it's something that you can get, you get a lot of information for how it works, the syndication, from being a limited partner.
Yep. That makes sense. I still haven't invested as an LP in a project. I want to at some point, but just to see exactly what you said, like how people are actually disseminating their information, how they're communicating with their limited partners, all that stuff. All right. So that does round down the clock. We are into the quick question round. Are you ready to rock?
Yes.
Let's do it. Starts with books or any piece or any form of education. I want two recommendations. Give me one for general life wisdom and one for real estate specific.
General wisdom would be the 80-20 rule. Fantastic book. No matter what you do, in doesn't even have to be in business. It could be in any part of your life. The 80-20 rule will amaze you. Another one I would say Think and Grow Rich is another one for business. I think that's more towards, obviously the name, it's more towards people making money. So I think that's a great one if anybody to figure out exactly where they're going. Because everybody's going to say Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So you need something different, right?
That is true. Everybody does say Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But for good reason, it's a good book. I don't hold it against them. 80-20 rule. I've heard about that. That's basically, the book is about like 20% of your efforts are going to result in 80% of the results, right?
Yes. And it's so true. It could be anything. It's a short read. You read it on a flight. And it's something where the author would just say, like, you know, when I do my bike ride, 20% of the hills are burning 80% of my calories. Same thing if you are in sales at any point, you're going to find out 20%, 80% of your money is made by 20% of the people. It's deadly honest, and it hurts, but you're going to really, if you're in sales, you're going to really refine what your funnel is and delete a lot more emails that come across your desk, because you know they're going to be putting that 20% of your income.
That, yep, absolutely. I feel like that is especially true with sales, with acquisitions, with finding your next property, is really hone in on that 20%, because that is where the money is made. Moving on, this is for the next question, is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Charles who was just getting started. He was just, you know, it was 2008, 2009. Let's go back to that version of Charles, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
I would have brought on third-party management sooner.
All right. I like that. What, is there any reason specific behind that, or just because it opens up your time, kind of?
Focusing more on acquisitions. And trust me, when you're self-managing, you learn more than you'll ever learn from any podcast, any book, anywhere, about more about people, especially if it's C-class real estate, which mine was. But that's good for like a year or two, and then give it to third-party management and get going, buy more properties.
Great advice. Actually, you're the first person to say that. And I think it's amazing, because it is really good advice. And moving to third party is definitely going to open up your time to find the better properties, which is what's going to allow you to expand your portfolio sooner. So great advice. Moving on to the next one. This is about positions in your business. We live and die based on the people that work with us. And so the first three positions are the most crucial for growing your business. What were the first three positions you hired for, and would you do it a different way? And we're not talking about the actual people, just the positions here.
I would say, so an assistant is, you know, obviously the assistant's number one for anything you're doing. Take a lot of stuff off your plate, and you can do this. I have like a list I always keep in my, like in my Trello. And it just is everything I want to stop doing, whether it's personally or in business. And then look at that list regularly and see what you can give to your virtual assistant or your any assistant you have, whatever you have, as you become more comfortable with them. So bring an assistant on, start them at a couple hours a week, and before you know it, they'll be working 20 hours a week for you, doing all types of stuff that you don't want to do. Absolutely. Next, I would say, would be someone to assist with underwriting. And not like full underwriting. Someone is
getting the data, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Tell me if this has any, like, if there's anything here, if there, you know what I mean? Look at these, yeah. If there's anything here in like 15, 20 minutes, let me know so I don't have to do that. And then
I actually calculated it one time, and for every deal, and I try to make an offer on anybody, any lead that comes in, they say what they want a deal. Any lead that comes in and they say they want an offer, I will give them an offer. That's my, like, my standard is, if you want an offer, I'm going to give it to you. Doesn't matter if you like it or not, you're going to get an offer. And I've realized that each time for me to do the underwriting to get them an offer, it takes probably about 30 minutes to 45 minutes. And that's just the LOI. It's not like we're not getting under contract or anything. Just to make an LOI takes 30 to 45 minutes. And if I'm trying to get five of those out a week, you know, five plus, then that adds up really quickly. And so I really like that, you know, that's the first thing you look at is get somebody to just help you cut down that time so you can already have the data, you know, put into a single location so you can look at it and make a judgment versus having to go around, grab all the data points you need to kind of fill it out.
Exactly.
So VA underwriting, do you have a third one or are you just going to stick?
Yeah, I would say in today's day and age, we have audio and video all day long with everything with our marketing. So bring someone on to cut, edit, all that stuff, turn it live. I don't mind making it, but can't be tedious with doing the recording and editing all stuff. So,
yep. I love that. All right, moving on. This one is United States. It's a big place, lot of opportunity out there. Give me one metro you're most excited about investing in today.
I would say, let's see all the regular ones were down in Florida. I would say Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a hot market. It's not as hot as other places that you usually hear of, like Tampa, Orlando. I don't invest in the Southeast, even though I live there. It's just always expensive. But I think Jacksonville, they have a lot of people moving there that aren't looking for living all the way down the south of Florida, which is completely different climate, really. So I think it's a growing area. And I think it's something that over the long term, it's not as picked over now. And, you know, I think it will be, but it's just nowhere near as hot as other markets that people all over the United States are looking for.
Yep. It's funny. We had a guest on the podcast probably a month or so back, and the whole time he was talking about Jacksonville. He loved Jacksonville's market. I was like, damn, man, I better go look at Jacksonville. All right. Moving on. This is for finding deals. That is the very beginning of the real estate cycle. So what is your favorite way to find good deals?
If we're finding off-market deals, it's going to be this gets a little bit harder when you're getting into larger syndications because there's not really off-market deals. You get your own broker and you have something that hasn't been put on LoopNet. They're kind of considered off-market or hasn't been blasted out their email list. So the best way if you're buying those type of properties, it's all broker relationships and it's very time-consuming. So that's why you have to partner when you get into larger projects because you need one person that's really doing the initial underwriting and talking to brokers pretty much the majority of their time. Then you have one person that's only dealing with real estate, like dealing with investors. And then you have another one that's really dealing with your projects that are going, making sure they keep on going. So it's because it's very intensive with relationships.
Yep, absolutely. Moving on to the next one. This is about mentors. None of us are islands. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. So who is one mentor who has contributed significantly to your career today?
I would say my father, which is my first mentor and my only non-paid mentor. But a lot of great information. But you know,
paid him in love. How about that?
There you go. I manage a lot of those properties and collected a lot of his rent too. So the thing is that that was my number one mentor. Yep.
All right. Well, shout out to Charles's dad. Thank you for getting him to where he is today. Moves us on to the next question. This is about Superman strengths. Everybody is gifted with the strength that we uniquely give this world. What is your Superman strength?
I think working out problems and I would not really say negotiating per se, but when I used to do a lot of self-managing and I used to deal directly with tenants and when I have these issues come up and they require you to come in, kind of negotiating out something that works for all parties. And it's a give and take having tenants and it's more give and take as you keep on going down from A, B, C. You know what I mean? There's a lot more negotiation that you didn't think you were supposed to get into when you're renting compared to.
I own mobile home parks, so I totally understand that.
They really like to sign and like negotiate as they go, I like to say.
All right. So that leads us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. You've given us a lot to think about. I'm sure people want to reach out and get in contact with you. What does your company offer? How can listeners get in contact with you?
So our company, Harborside Partners, you can come to our website, harborsidepartners.com, and we have a free guide on passive investing in real estate. And you can set up a strategy call with me there. Feel free. Reach out if you're interested in learning any more about actively or passively investing in real estate. I get on calls with everybody all the time. And I also have a podcast that's on the website as well, Global Investors Podcast, where we have people that are investing in U.S. real estate. And it's a mix between international investors that listen and also U.S. investors that listen. So.
Cool. Right on. So that is harborsidepartners.com. I will put that URL in the show notes. So if y'all want to reach out to Charles, just go ahead and click a little more in the description. It'll pull down the full description. And in there, you can find his URL. All right, Charles. Well, that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thanks for having me, Gabe. Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, at therealestateinvestingclub.com. And if you guys want to support the show, all we ask is you give us a like, thumbs up, share, all that jazz. Other than that, hope you guys have an absolutely fantastic week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.